Welcome, everyone. I think we'll get going. The sooner we start, the sooner we can get home. Welcome to the local planning panel, Wollongong's local planning panel. We have four items on the agenda tonight, and we'll do them in order. Just to let you know, we will be recording. So the recording of the meeting will be on Council's website tomorrow, whenever the minutes of the meeting are on. Because we're recording, we must all remember that we are being recorded and behave appropriately with our language, etc. We, as I said, we have four items, and I'll take them in order. And I have actually people speaking on each item. And what I'll do is I'll call you up, and if you come to this table here, put the microphone on, and then you have 5 minutes to make your representation. The panel may or may not have questions of whoever's making the representation. That doesn't come cut out of your 5 minutes. And I'll get the council to let me know when you're close to your 5 minutes, because we need to move things on. We will not be making a decision. We will be making a decision. We will be going through each item, and then we will adjourn the meeting, and we will make a decision before the night, and then we will, that decision will be posted on the website in the next 24 hours. We don't do one meeting, adjourn, make a decision, another item, adjourn, make a decision. We go through all the items, hear everyone's points of view, make a decision before we leave invariably this evening, and those that decision is then put on the website. Okay. Always done it. And what I was going to say was we have all signed a declaration of interest, so there are no conflicts of interest, but just for the recording, I'll ask everyone I've got a conflict.
None from me.
And you are?
Sorry. Robert Montgomery, no conflict.
Sue Francis, no conflict.
Helena Miller, no conflict from me either.
Bernard Hibbard, no conflict.
Fantastic. If we had a conflict, that would be a problem now. Okay, first item is Young and Belmore Streets. It's a DA that was previously deferred, and we have a report come back to us. Now I've got Aron Knowles. Please come forward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Ron Knowles and I live at 817 Church Street, Wollongong, which is within the city CBD. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. I spoke at the Joint Regional Panel in 2017 on a previous DA for this site. When I first looked at the public file, I noted the estimate of $19.77 million as the estimated cost. I asked questions of Council, which I have not received a written reply as yet. Will this DA need to be referred to JRPP? The previous DA had been referred to JRPP. Two.
Can I just stop you on that point, just to clarify that? The value for JRPP is 30.
30 million? I thought it was 20 million. Well, that was the second one. As the estimate is, can it be checked? Because I believe the minimum is $20 million for reference to JRPP, but it's now been increased to $30 million. And where is the public local part to service this DA? Further, I suggested the notification area should have been included the properties in Market Street between Kira and Young Street and Victoria Street between Kira and Young Street, as these streets would be the major access to this site. I will be very quick, Madam Chair, because I know 3 minutes goes quickly. I will briefly refer to Council's current City Centre LEP. In the early 2000s, Dr. Moritz, Director of Planning, had a three-day workshop attended by approximately 100 as part of the LEP. The applicant, you are the applicant, I believe, also attended that thing. We came forward with a number of planning principles. The most important one was that no building should be above the direct line of sight from the foreshore to the escarpment. I have asked council through two GIPA applications what happened to that three-day workshop, because with 100 people attending, including architects, town planners, we expected a lot of things to happen. It appears as though nothing happened. Dr. Michael Moritz left council after a strenuous disagreement with Mr. Rod Otsey, the then chief executive officer. Council developed their own LEP that had bonuses. However, the bonuses weren't defined and the Department of Planning did not allow that LEP to be exhibited. So they appointed Mr. Chris Johnson, who was the executive officer, Cities Commission, Department of Planning, and Mr. Rod Otsey, the chief executive officer of council, to head a planning committee to develop a new LEP. Both have been known as being pro-development, very much so. Mr. Otsey was the subject of a critical decision by ICAT, which led to the dismissal of the elected councils, and Mr. Johnson is now chief executive of the Urban Task Force, which has been known as the Developers Lobby Group. So the idea of lower scale developments, human scale, was abandoned, and it was the new LEP was adopted in approximately 2008. The huge heights of up to 120 metres and a floor space ratio of 6-1 rather frightens me, as all the sites in these areas could achieve that maximum, although the 100 metres is basically above the railway line where the Department of Transport has some property interests. However, in view of Harry Trigolov of Meriton threatening to go to the Land Environment Court if the government doesn't approve his 40 stories plus development in Ryde, makes me even more worried. The human level approach, is it being rejected? Second point. At the JRPP meeting, I referred to the Australia Square building in Sydney where I worked. This has large public spaces around the whole building on two different levels, which mean that people can be in the sun, in the shade, under cover, out in the rain or the elements. Now, unfortunately, this building goes from edge to edge with a podium which dominates at ground levels. Such a policy of council encouraging full-width podium really needs investigation. These towers are full-width podiums which dominate the landscape. Three, public recreation park. There are no public parks, neighbourhood or larger, in the Garden Hill area, bounded by Crown Street, Mercury Street, Frostbridge Drive and South Coast Railway line, which have up to 120 metre height. There is no public park in the North East Central Business District.
Are you nearly done?
Nearly, which includes this area. Again, up to 120 metres. The only part that was there was where the old Scout Hall was, and that was removed and it was made into a permanent parking area. And again, that was in the Cottrell development, which was one of the two major developments investigated by ICAT. The nearest green is immediately east of Rorona College in Beaton Park, where traditionally students and people play frisbee, tip football, kick around footballs, and is available for passive recreation, but council intends to have it as a car park. The Section 94 contribution plan, which I think is under a new name, and I apologise for forgetting the new name, is being used for infrastructure and not available to purchase land for public recreation purposes. As per my submission on an earlier DA, which is number three, I'll go into that a bit more length. But, Madam Chair, I and others hope that the committee or panel in evaluating DAs will try to suggest to council what changes need to occur so that good planning is adopted rather than the current LEP strictly adhered to, which has very questions as to its heights and its floor space ratios. Mr. Johnson was unable to explain why the heights and the floor space ratios for Wollongong LEP were significantly and substantially higher than those for Newcastle, Gosford, Penrith and Liverpool, which were having LEPs developed at the same time.
Just clarify, as I'm sure you're aware, and I just want to clarify for everyone in the room, that this council, as well as this panel, is obliged to consider every application in accordance with the controls that apply at the time. Whether those controls change into the future is a matter that can only be considered when they do or if they do change. We are obliged by law to consider against the controls that apply, whether we like them or not.
Madam Chair, I am aware of that because Chief Justice Prescott of the Land Environment Court reminded me that in his last letter to me.
Ah, great company that I'm in. Okay, thank you very much.
Can I just submit my written...
By all means.
Because I didn't adhere to it.
That's fine. Thank you very much.
In 3-5 minutes.
I might suggest you, we do know some of the history, so you could you could leave out the history and just get to the pertinent bits, because the history we already know. Thank you. Okay, so Mr. D'Angelo, Ms. Treglow and John Issa, who would like to come forward? And if you both, all three do, then by all means bring up some chairs.
DiMartino is the surname, ADM Architects. Elaine Treglown, our town planning consultant, is here. The proponents here as well. If there are any questions, please ask. Feel free to ask us. We are before the panel tonight. More so to answer questions than do a presentation. I would like to simply say that we've worked very closely with council officers to amend the proposal. There were reasons previously that the council officers were unhappy with particular areas of the proposal, and we've worked very hard to make amendments. Together with the proponent, we feel it is a better scheme today than what it was last time it was referred to the panel. I'm not sure if you need me to go through the actual changes, but other to say, it's a better proposal.
Thank you. I think there might be a few questions from the panel, so perhaps it's best if we do it that way.
Yes, I agree.
Questions?
I just wanted to ask about the solar... The plans and the solar access and the ventilation. So,
yes.
On the floor plans, the I assume that the legend shows red dot for sunlight access and green dot for cross ventilation.
Yes.
Although I'm a bit confused because the units that are on the eastern side appear to have sunlight access. Sorry, not have sunlight access, and the ones on the western side do. So I'm just wondering if you can just clarify whether there's an error in the plan.
No, there's no error. The plan respects the solar access modelling that's indicated on the latter drawings, the series of which I can refer you to the 400 series, A403, 04, 05, 06, 07, what you will see in the 3D modelling is that north is slightly, if you like, to the left. Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, that's a 3D model of the building, and we cast the sun onto the building, and it generates the shadows automatically through the program. You will see that the western facade is in sun pretty much from 12 o'clock onwards, whereas the eastern facade is only in sun on the northeastern corner, not the southeastern corner. And the reason for that is that north is not directly up the page. North is actually slightly to the left of the page, if you like. So actually that means that the western facade gets more sun than the eastern facade. And therefore... we have three units on the western side and only one unit on the eastern side that receives the sun. That's how it's broken up. I'm not sure if you can see that, or I can point to it if you like.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. So north, if you look at any of the standard floor plans, you will see that north is not directly up the page. It's actually to the west, if you like. Mm-hmm. Or north to the west, that doesn't make sense, but it's to the left of the site. So you can see that through this 3D diagrams, the western facade, if you like, gets more sun than the eastern facade. Yeah.
Thank you.
And four out of the five... Four out... Four,
no, we know four.
Yep, okay, yep, let's move on.
The other thing was storage.
Mm-hmm.
So I noticed on the lower ground floor plan,
yep.
we have a lot of residential storage units which appear to come off the access ramp, and I'm just not sure about why they can't be relocated and actually be located adjacent to the car parks, or on the same level at least as the car parks that they would be used for. They appear to be very difficult to access, and you have to actually put, you know, you have to walk across the access ramp, the driveway ramp, to get to them, and I imagine that that would be quite difficult, and that you could potentially be a safety issue with pedestrians and cars conflicting with each other, particularly if people were trying to carry trolleys or whatever.
So we've got no problem with relocating them if that's what the panel prefer. Just to answer your question, they're located beside the ramp, but they're accessed from the flat sections of the ramp, not the actual ramp itself. But those that are located along that access way, if you felt they could be relocated, we could look at that. That's fine.
Thank you.
I think our preference would be to have them located in the levels 1, 2, and 3, where they're relevant to the individual units on those levels, and that we note that you've got 8 parking spaces in excess.
Yeah, and they're counted within the FSR as well. Yeah,
that's right. And so would your storage if it were above ground. So,
and we do have FSR available to count the storage.
So what we would prefer is your storage to be located on the relevant levels to the...
We can look at that.
And remove from that location, I think, and that if FSR became a problem, then you should sacrifice the excess parking, which is already counted as floor space and would be floor space for storage.
Mm.
I think that would, one, be more functional, two, better amenity for the residents in terms of access to their storage.
Well, there are car parking spaces in the basement as well. Obviously, those car spaces can have storage in the basement, I'm assuming.
Indeed.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Yes, it's fine.
Yeah, I understand.
The concern relates to the storage off
the
ramp.
On the ramp, okay.
Yep.
Yep. Yep.
That's right.
Fair enough, thank you.
Any other queries? Oh, yes, there was one issue, and Mr. Knowles sort of hit it to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
The value of the development at 19 million, it seems to be a little bit
light. I think it's 20 million, 19.8 million.
Well, 19.7,
yeah.
You had a QS report?
There is a QS report. I think the QS is on the banks panel. So
okay.
That's all my comment about that.
Okay.
I'm not an expert in costs.
No,
to be
no,
honest.
No. That's fine.
Yep.
Any other questions from the panel?
No.
No? Anything you'd like us to hear that we haven't otherwise raised? I think I agree with you that this is a better solution. I think removing that level off the podium, it allows the tower to be slimmer and mm-hmm. sit better, and a whole range of reasons. So I appreciate the amendments you've made. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. So that's the end of item one. As I said, we will deliberate on that one
mm-hmm.
at the end of the meeting. Item two is 18 Hopetoun Street, Winoona, and I have 4 groups of people to speak. The first person on my list is Craig Moyer. So my apologies. Come forward. I'll get all the names wrong, so, you know, Moyer. Okay, got it. Oh, well done. Probably.
Not 11.
The floor is yours. Thank you very much. Adrian Lem? Lemmy. I'll be consistent. Get it wrong. Tamara Moore. I'm going to get this. Moya, I'm going to get wrong. I've got to be consistent.
Squeezing five more townhouses on the block that does not comply for multi-dwelling development is just wrong on many levels. The block's frontage is too narrow. Government, local council provides guidelines and regulations for a reason, so residents, ratepayers feel safe in their neighbourhood and have the best living conditions possible. Bending those rules will create chaos and unfairness. Traffic on the road has become quite dangerous due to the amount of cars driving through and parked cars on both sides of the road. Car repair business nearby tests their cars on our street. They drive them at high speed, then slam on the brakes. Having two major businesses on our streets, Medical Centre and Fernwood Fitness, who do not provide parking for their customers. So that results in customers parking their cars all along Hopetoun Street, leaving no spaces for residents. We also observe cars being parked at no stopping and no parking zone, resulting in blocking the pathway going from the bus stop to medical centre, forcing elderly people and those with prams and young children walk on the very busy road. There have been a number of car accidents, including ourselves, when our neighbour hit our car simply because there was not enough room to manoeuvre the car. Allowing this multi-dwelling development will create even more traffic and unsafe conditions on the street. Hopetoun Street is overdeveloped with townhouses, unit blocks and villas, and there is a huge amount of rubbish bins to be emptied every week. In addition to that, a significant number of residents from Pitman Lane put their bins on our streets for rubbish collection as well. Being already a congested street, there is simply no room to accommodate for another 10 bins of the proposed development. Another concern that residents have is the possibility of asbestos presence. They haven't been provided with documents stating otherwise, and afraid that their health will be put at risk if removal of debris is done incorrectly. Only a handful of residents were notified by the council about the proposed development back in September, and therefore majority of them did not have an opportunity to speak out. Dear members of the panel, residents of Hopetoun Street are reaching out to you in the hope that the proposed development won't be allowed as it does not comply with the council regulations. Please come to our streets at different times of the day. See for yourselves, talk to people, hear them. Stick to the existing council rules. After all, it should be about your people, your community. I would like to submit a signed petition from 73 residents of Hopetoun Street and some photos. Thank you very much. Do you have any questions? Thank you.
I have two people identified from the applicant. That's Luke Rowlandson and Bryce Short. Who wants to come up?
Luke Rollinson from MMJ. We were the applicants and town planners on the project. Thank you for allowing us to respond to the community comments today that were raised by the three speakers. In relation to Mr. Moyer's first comments that lives at 20 Hopetoun, the location of the dwelling was noted with regards to the proposed layout of the development. The longer side of the development, which is the eastern side in terms of its straight alignment, is sort of the primary location for the driveway because of that step back in the property that comes further towards the rear. So the driveway was sited on the eastern side, and in doing so, we were mindful of any impacts towards that existing residence. The building has been stepped back greater than the minimum street frontage setback requirements for such a development to be beyond the existing facade of that existing cottage, which is well presented to that Hopetoun Street frontage. We also sited the courtyard for that front dwelling towards the street frontage at a building alignment behind the dwelling to also take any outdoor impacts associated with the occupation of that POS area for any future residents away from that residential dwelling, with the remaining unit two being located on that side due to the driveway arrangement on the eastern side. Part of the design was certainly critiqued in regards to the upper level presentation of the actual development to provide only sort of the non-habitable spaces upstairs or the non-active spaces being primarily bedrooms and bathrooms with limited windows where possible overlooking and some high-level windows overlooking side boundaries. In regards to consultation with adjoining landowners, we certainly didn't approach the owner of number 20. That is correct. I'm not sure where that reference came from, but the consultation may have been with the Pittman Lane landowners and the body corporate there. The initial proposal considered an easement through the west of that Pittman Lane property and the northwest corner of the subject site and down another property in Farrell Road. I think it was 101 Farrell Road down to Farrell Road in terms of getting that stormwater out. And that may have been the reference to consultation with adjoining landowners with regards to the proposal. In regards to the comments on dual occupancy, they're referenced throughout the Clause 4.6 exemption to a statement that we've provided, and it was more so identifying a reference towards the siding of two dwellings towards the frontage with the greater three dwellings located towards the rear, and just emphasising the typical standards for a dual occupancy consideration and spatial requirements associated with that. With regards to manoeuvring, the turning diagrams are provided and Council's traffic engineer has signed off on those manoeuvrability considerations. In relation to the side eastern setback and reduced landscape strip, argue that that landscape strip adjoins another driveway and the function of a 1 metre landscape strip in that location will serve just as good as a 1.5 metre landscape strip. And Council's landscape section and planners have agreed with the justification provided for that nominal shortfall there, particularly on the basis where the entire site exceeds the minimum 30% landscape requirements throughout and exceeds the standard 6 metre deep soil zone width towards the rear. In regards to solar access impacts on 20 Hopetoun, yes, the development will partially impact through that morning period, but in accordance with Council's controls, that will only be for a short time in the morning and will meet the expectations under the Council's DCP for overshadowing of adjoining properties. The POS considerations and interfaces, again, the POS of Unit 1 is oriented towards the street frontage with a good setback towards that street and some landscape buffer in between, whilst Unit 2 is sited adjacent to the subject site of Mr Moyer. Those POS and active spaces, again, are at ground level and that was a consideration for the design throughout the entire site, getting those active spaces more at ground level. In regards to Adrian Lem's comments, I'm not sure of the history of the heritage officer and the extension that was proposed on the subject site, but that site is heritage listed and this site is not heritage listed. However, we've been mindful of that in-face and deep soil zone towards the rear of the subject site. And in regards to the request for the bedroom window, I'm sure that the developer would have no issue with relocating that to the east or putting a high-level window in. Prefer not a frosted window for a bedroom, but certainly would put either a high-level or transfer that to the east if that is a something the panel is willing to look at as well. In regards to Ms Moyer's comment and the dangerous traffic considerations in Hopedon Street, I can't comment on the car repair business and the brake testing that may happen there, but the development in terms of council's DCP for parking expectations complies with all vehicles being able to enter and exit the site in a forward direction as required by council for these type of developments. In terms of waste servicing, appropriate frontage is available under council's DCP to have waste transferred towards the front for standard council domestic pickup. In regards to the asbestos comment, that would be dealt with by demolition contractors at the time, but we'd ensure that work was done appropriately. And if council or the panel feels that conditions of consent need to be strengthened in that respect, then I would have no issue with that.
Thank you very much. Panel, did we have any questions? I'll defer to you guys first.
Sorry, I don't have the plan right in front of me, but yep. I will in a second. Just on, and some of the submitters raised issues about parking and manoeuvring. Mm-hmm. And I notice on your manoeuvring plan for exiting, there appears to be a bit of fudging going on in relation to Unit 2, you've shown the swept path, putting the car in the garage.
It's your plan, sheet 6 of 19.
Sorry.
Yep. Just getting up, sorry.
Yeah, no, appreciate it.
Of course, it's the last one.
Always is.
Yep, so in Unit 2, you've got two cars shown in the garage, and then you've got your swept path running over that.
Mm-hmm.
But your swept path basically means you're parking that car halfway into the other car.
Yep,
it's just not, that doesn't look right. And then right at the end in Unit 5, I'm assuming that you haven't put a swept path for this for one of the spaces because it doesn't work.
For Unit 5?
Yep.
Yep. We can certainly confirm that. I'm not the designer, but certainly we can have that confirmed in terms of to make sure that those parking spaces from those areas that you've raised.
I don't think it's a matter of confirmation unless you want to confirm
work.
That it doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
Oh, okay. Well,
using your templates, it doesn't work.
Hmm.
At least, well, and in fact, certainly one of the spaces.
And in fact, from a planning point of view, having looked at these, you
from Unit 2, that's
unit two
that's
and
suggested.
Unit 5.
I'm not convinced that Unit 5 doesn't work just by the ability to reverse back at that distance, but
no.
Get that angle.
How can the furthest car space reverse out?
The one that doesn't have the turning template on.
When there's a visitor in the parking space.
Yeah, in terms of taking that into the path of the other one that's there before it reverses back into that section. So.
Yes. It can't work.
Okay.
Geometry just doesn't allow it to work.
I cut the car out, it doesn't fit.
It doesn't work. It doesn't work. Yeah.
And in relation to the overall density of the development, has any consideration been given to whether, specifically with some non-compliances and some exceptions that you're asking for, whether or not this may be an overdevelopment?
Yep, so that was certainly raised during the pre-DA that we had initially. We have had some iterations throughout the process where council did consider just by virtue of the nature of some of the variations, that they considered it to be an overdevelopment. However, in the resulting changes and the plans you have before you, council agree with us that we don't consider it to be an overdevelopment in regards to the outcome, given the variances being considered are quite nominal for that small landscape strip that's there. Also acknowledging the site width criteria. Yeah.
That's all for me.
Ask also about the private open space and the shadowing. So it looks on the plans. I know the council's report says that four of the five units will receive the adequate 3 hours, but it doesn't appear to be the case when you look at the shadow plans.
Yeah, so I think units 5 to 3 will achieve the three units, 66%. Unit 2...
60%.
Sorry. Unit 2. We did originally have that flipped to the which is actually just noticed the shadow diagram still shows that flipped to the northern side, which was far more overshadowed than flipping it to the southern side. Unit 2. Unit 2, so there's an inconsistency in that the documentation there to get sunlight from from that basically the midday sort of time onwards to that space. So council requires that 50% of the POS area get the 3 hours. So by flipping that, we get 50% of those four POSs to three hours.
You say flipping, you're talking about flipping the private open space related to
units. So if you see the site plan, the unit 2 POS is inconsistent with the shadow diagram, which was a previous iteration where that unit 2 PS and dwelling sort of arrangement was flipped. So it was hard up against the unit 3, basically, and that overshadowed that. So shifting it to that was the reason why it was shifted to the southern side. Mm.
And the other question I had was just in terms of the amount of living area for the size of units, the amenity of it. So they're very large units, surprisingly large for the size of the site and the fact that you've got four three-bedroom and one four-bedroom unit on the site, and it appears that they're very large numbers of bedrooms, but the living area isn't commensurate with that. So I'm just wondering if you can just explain, how you think in terms of that amenity to the internal amenity will work for future residents.
Yeah. We haven't been in too much involved from a real estate point of view to understand products, but the developer has been involved continually through all the plan changes with one agency out in the Winoona area, in terms of the amenity. All the floor plans for the ground floor are all open floor plans. I do note that there are three bedrooms and four bedroom products, but the amenity, from my perspective, will be appropriate for the site. So, and that's, I guess, being guided by the real estate agent, to be honest. Yeah. Well,
I think we're asking a planning question here. Mm-hmm. We're talking about the amenity for the dwellings under the Act as a requirement for residential amenity.
Yep.
You have potentially between 4 to 8 people, the adults, potentially. And we've got one communal living space.
Mm-hmm.
Which is not significant, which is not large.
Which is not large.
It's quite small.
Mm.
You would expect that size for something that's 2-bedroom, possibly, but it appears to be smaller than would be required, particularly for a 3 or 4-bedroom dwelling, family dwelling.
A lot of the size of the products are pretty consistent with stuff that's happening in the northern suburbs from our perspective and the jobs that we've been involved in, to be honest. They do have nice outdoor spaces that'll be greater than the 4x5 for the most part. I can't really comment any further, sorry.
I suppose the other thing is that because you've got so many bedrooms, it also pushes up your parking demand.
Oh, it's based on, yeah, it's based on that. The council don't do their calculations on bedrooms. They do it on GFA, total GFA considerations. Oh, okay. So the bigger
GFA, i.e. the bigger dwellings, have a demand for greater parking. And parking and manoeuvring of vehicles is a problem on this site.
And from
what we can see, please tell us something we're missing, but what we've seen so far is that there's too much on the site. And what's on the site is too big.
Yeah, I've got no comment in regards to answering that, if that's your opinion. We'd be happy to look at any comments or suggestions you may have to refine the GFA or reduce bedrooms to those upper levels and make them more commensurate with the suggested residential amenity that you're after. So, yeah, we'd be happy to consider some design suggestions.
I think one of the issues that the panel is dealing with is with a clause 4.6 variation to the minimum site width. One of the you have to be able to demonstrate that there's sufficient environmental planning grounds, as you know, among other things. And when you look at a development, that's asking for an exception from the development standard, and you see some non-compliances, and then you see some issues with potential amenity for future residents because of the number of the bedrooms and the size of the living space, it sort of starts to reduce any argument about, you know, environmental planning grounds. So that's partially, where the panel's comments are
I guess we saw that just by virtue of context and neighbours, that having more landscaped area across the site in terms of the minimum, having more deep soil across the site in terms of the minimum, sharpening those setbacks to make sure that there were no building site setback issues in terms of footprint encroachment into boundaries. We saw those as primary considerations for the site. Like we're well under the FSR, and we could look at making those living rooms bigger by reducing those other considerations. We would need to refine the traffic manoeuvring, as you've pointed out tonight. So I guess we took that balance of making sure that our building footprint across the site was quite sharp for having increasing those other amenity considerations for the neighbours over the context considerations that you've raised here, mate. I think that's the sort of where we've come from.
I think what the panel's saying is that we would expect both of those things to happen.
Yep.
So potentially, if you had four dwellings on this site, you could achieve all of those things. So that's sort of what we're weighing up.
Yeah.
And one other thing I'd like to raise is that what is common in this form of development is some form of break to the building mass. And what you and it's common, and then you can see it in the development to the existing townhouse development on the to the east. You've got a break in the building form, so you don't have a continuous strip of mass. And often what happens is you do that over the garaging. So what often happens is you have something that delineates the individual structures, and you have the break in the mass on the over the garages. And it might be that this is flipped the wrong way, that you've got too much mass at the first floor and you need to look at increasing the public living area on the ground floor.
Yeah. Well, that's
a function of the number of units. You can't do that because you've got too much on the site.
Yeah.
So We will make our decision, but I think we're foreshadowing some concerns.
Yeah, no, I understand. We've heard them loud and clear tonight, and like I said, we'd be happy to look at redesign considerations and suggestions that the panel may have.
Okay, so if there were to be a deferral to look at these issues, is it something that you would genuinely look at?
Definitely, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Just a comment. I don't think you mentioned there's other developments similar to this in the northern suburbs. I don't think you should consider that what developers can put in or what real estate agents want is what the community wants. So I think that's got to be taken into consideration as well.
Yep.
Because you're changing the tone of a community.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just about yield and things like that. So
yeah, and I understand that. And that comment was in reference to living room sizes and products. But I appreciate your comment. I'll take that on board for sure.
Thank you. We will consider this matter this evening. Thank you.
Thank you.
Item 3 is 11 Gipps Street, Wollongong. And I have Mr. Knowles again, and I have two other submitters as well as Mr. Knowles, and then I have the applicant. So, Mr. Knowles, if you are first on my list again, Mr. Knowles.
Excuse me, I've had double knee operation, so I'm a bit...
Oh, that hurts, I know.
I won't tell you where I live, you know that. However...
Don't tell me the history again. Save your time for things about this.
I'll try to, Madam Chair, but I like to do what I think is important, not necessarily what panels think is important. I know that. Well, it's really yours. Right. I lived at 4 Gibbs Street on the northern side of Gibbs Street, just opposite Mar Street in 2008-2009. This development consisted of three separate buildings with a floor space ratio of just under 1, whereas the maximum at that stage was 1.25. This allowed wide separation of the three buildings on Gibbs Street, at 4 Gibbs Street. Wide separation of the three buildings, separation from the adjacent buildings, plenty of open space within the property, including a garden building or bandstand. The buildings were only three stories high, so that the roof line did not exceed the height of the row of canary date palms in the middle of Gibbs Street. These are heritage listed, item 6512. I note that the revised plans do reduce the height for the basement and the effect on people in Mar Street. However, my worries and concerns are the height of the building. I believe that a generic 24 metres, 1.5 floor space ratio for the whole of Smiths Hill, North Wollongong is wrong. I believe good planning looks at special areas which may need special consideration. The special areas, I believe, are narrow streets, cul-de-sacs, where there is a heritage items and where there are special streetscapes. As such, I believe no building in this area should be above the height of the heritage-listed canary date palms. 2, provision of off-street parking. I've noticed that there's 17 places for residents and 3 for visitor parking. I realise it's based on council's current code. I believe the 3-bedroom units are 121 square metres and the 2-bedroom units are 93 square metres and will be regarded as luxury units. The building is not within easy walking distance of Crown Street Mall or the North Wollongong Railway Station, and residents will have to depend on the private motor vehicle. I note that even in the building in which I live, the 3-bedroom units, in most cases, there are 3 motor cars for the 3-bedroom units. The old off-street car parking was required based on the number of bedrooms. It's now based on the gross floor area. 3, public open space. Under Council's previous Section 94 contribution, there was provision for funding for both local parts. However, the new code does not allow it. However, before the LEP was done in 2007, Jane Irwin Landscape Architects were employed by Council to prepare studies on the public spaces. Jane Irwin Landscape Architects was one of the consortium of 4 firms that won the International Award for Darling Harbour. The firm recommended a public park for the Smiths Hill area, bounded by Burke, Carmel, Smith and Flinders Street. Indeed, the 2 initial documents about this showed the public park there, and I wrote to Council congratulating them on putting a public park, which had been requested for almost 18 years. Unfortunately, Council staff then realised it was there and said, "Oh, Mr. Knowles, it's not going ahead," and it didn't go ahead. Neighbourhood Forum 5 and its predecessor, Neighbourhood Committee Area 6, have been asking for a public park for this area. Council has refused, and at one stage Council recognised this lack of public park and approached Smiths Hill High School for use of the grounds for local residents, but the school refused this. The recent study, The Great Leap Backwards, and I refer to the Daily Telegraph article of February the 9th, 2009, showed primary age children can leap about 18 centimetres less than 100 years ago. The report suggests in part it's caused by the increased use of computers and screens, and B, less land around homes and less local parks for children to exercise. I can remember back in the 1960s when local children like myself played cricket on our footpaths and our streets. This does not occur anymore. The house sizes where I lived were generally 66 by 150. House blocks are much smaller than that. I recognise that the statement of environmental effects refers to the beachfront and the Stuart Park, but these areas are, one, heavily used, not just by Wollongong residents, but tourists and those from the southern and southwestern Sydney. Stuart Park's being used for commercial purposes, but that's something that Mr Justice Moore allowed in the Land and Environment Court. In the case of Stuart Park, it's not within easy walking distance, and the heavily trafficked streets of Carmel, Kembla, Burke and Cliff Road make it difficult to access these beachfront areas. So I feel that the non-provision of a local neighbourhood park needs to be addressed. In conclusion, Madam Chair, I believe the heights are wrong. I believe Council and this committee should recognise the importance of the Canary Palms and make sure that no building in Gibb Street fronting those palms are higher than the palms. I believe there needs to be more off-street car parking, realising that these will be luxury units and provide one car parking space for three-bedroom units is wrong, even if it's 1.25 on a calculation basis. And three, I believe a public park is absolutely essential for this area because if you look here, the last 15 years we've had individual housing on large blocks being replaced by high-rise units. The worst case is rather opposite me when the late Mrs. James's two houses were knocked down and 32 units were built on that site with her two homes and lovely gardens. I'm fortunate I have big trees between me and Edward Street. Even yesterday I had a silver-crested cockatoo in my trees on the adjoining property, but right next to me, and I often have kookaburras and others there. There'll be no nice areas. There'll be big brick, ugly buildings, and I use the word ugly, and I have no respect for Harry Trigolopoulos. He might, I don't think he will tell you that. So we want good planning. We want recognition that high-rise residential development has some bad effects, and we would like those bad effects understood and ameliorated to some extent. Thank you, Madam Chairman, and to your panel for hearing me. I know Mr. Montgomery has heard me so often, he probably has almost a heart attack for hearing me again. Thank you. Oh, any questions, I should say?
John Razine?
Yep.
Sorry.
Yeah. Yes, good evening. I live next door to the development in Mar Street. I'm in number 6 Mar Street. My biggest issue, obviously, is overshadowing. I was concerned when I saw the overshadowing diagrams. And I requested the Equinox diagrams, and to be honest, the impact's even worse than I thought it was going to be. By my calculations, I believe that I'm going to be suffering a lack of sunshine on the roof of my house for up to 7 months of the year. At the moment, I get sunshine on the roof of that house all year round, middle of winter and everything. By losing that much sun, it will impact on, home will be darker, it'll be a lot colder, could lead to possible mould problems. Obviously, my heating costs are going to go up a hell of a lot. I'm in a position where this development is going to increase my costs. It's going to cost me to live on this site. We've been there 6 years. I've done a lot of work on this house. I've maximised the sunlight that comes into the place. We've got it set up in such a way that it's we love living there. It's just easy living, and we spend a lot of time on our back deck. Now, that back deck is... currently we don't get sunshine on that back deck in winter until about, I think it's about 11 o'clock, 10 or 11 o'clock, can't recall. That's going to be a lot worse now. That concerns me a hell of a lot. The solar access that I lose, and I find it a bit hypocritical too, as in the impact statement on that development, it highlights that the solar efficiency of the new building is going to be 100%. They're going to get The amenity is going to be brilliant. It's, you know, it'll. I think the definition of amenity is to increase the livability of residents and people around there, and it will minimise their heating and cooling costs the way it's developed. It destroys all of mine. Complete opposite. From my perspective, I find that's so unfair. I realise I live in a high-rise development area. I wasn't expecting this to happen, of course. But I also feel that something needs to be done. As the gentleman said before me, there are so many high-rises coming out of the ground or about to come out of the ground even in this area that is totally changing the landscape. Council wants to promote one-bedroom, two-bedroom, three-bedroom facilities, but they're doing nothing to maintain the old-fashioned home. You know, for a family that wants to live in a home, have a backyard, do all those things, so many houses have been lost in this area. And it's, I think it's a real shame. I can't see it stopping quickly. I feel something needs to be done on that, in that vein. It's also going to have an impact on the value of my home. Less sun, just different things like that. Okay. Out of my control, out of anybody's control, but it's an issue that concerns me as well. I believe the setbacks, even though they may comply, there's scope there for the setback to be a little bit more so. It could comply with the current streetscapes. At the moment, both Gipps Street and Mar Street, they don't have their 6 metre or 4.5 metre offsets on most of those places, either street. So if it's got to be there, why not match what's there currently? Even that heritage listed house that's on the corner, the setback there is only about 2.5 metres, I think. I'm not sure. There's something along those regards. And I agree totally with that gentleman with those palms in Gibbs Street. They're a big feature. I think they are a heritage listed item. They should be taken into consideration and not minimised. I've also got an issue with the impact statement where, from my regard, it belittles my situation. It says there that the overall impact of the overshadowing is, you know, minimal and acceptable. I'd like to ask you guys, what is your definition of acceptable or unacceptable? Where does it come in? To me, I think it's a massive impact to lose that much sunshine. Even council guidelines say you're supposed to have 3 hours of sunshine between 9 a.m. and 3 p.m. in winter. I won't be getting that. It's a pretty hard call, I think, especially the way we live. I would love for the panel to come and have a look at my house and understand how it will impact. It's pretty difficult to tell just from the outside. There's a bit more to my place. It's not until you come inside and have a look at everything, the back deck, everything works quite well for us. A lot of that will change. There are issues with parking and traffic. We raised the same issues when the Marquee building was built across the road. And unfortunately, with every development, most of the council will just turn around and say, the impact will be minimal. But how many minimal impacts does it take to become a major impact? They don't consider a cumulative effect in the area. And lots of little bits add up to a lot. Parking is an issue in the street. Bins are an issue. I know the bins comply with council numbers. I maintain that these developments don't have enough bins. The one across the road, which I mentioned as an issue.
10 more seconds.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, bins are a problem. As I said, I'd love to show you a little diagram too with moving the building. I don't know if that's a consequence to you at the moment. And solar panels. Isn't it about time that possibly a developer that blocks my solar access should be able to put solar panels on his roof for my use? If people laugh.
I'll ask him.
Yeah. No, well, you know, that's, to me, it's a real issue. I can't do it. this development goes ahead, I can't do it. We'll stop.
Okay, thank you. Out of time. Thank you very much.
Okay.
We've heard what you've said. We understand your concerns. Francesca Mazzio. Thank you.
Hello. My name is Francesca Mazzio.
Is this on? Is the light on?
Yep.
Okay, thank you.
I've been living in Mar Street all my life. I've seen the changes, and I accept a lot of them. We fought Mar Quay not to go ahead, and as you can see, it has gone ahead. Now, if this development goes on, it is going to impact me as well. I live in number 8. I'm right next to John. They've only taken into consideration John's place, but I've got a feeling the shadowing is going to impact on my home as well. Now, what do you do? If you look around you, you can see, I think Wollongong is being overdeveloped. Council says we'd like everybody to live here, homeowners, high-rise, apartment people, but you're not. You're slowly pushing the homeowner out of Wollongong. I know economic-wise you're saying, oh, well, we're better off putting an apartment. We can get more rent. We can get more rates from that. Because in where you're going to... The Marquee, that was 3 homes. How many apartments are there now? 21. We can understand that. But don't you think everybody should be able to live in Wollongong that want to? Why are you pushing out people that have been in their homes for so many years? That overshadowing is really, really going to impact on John even more than me. He's lived there 6 years. I've lived there 56 years. My father was in there since the 50s. That's been a family home for years and years. Yous can all go home and say, oh, well, we don't have to worry about it. But we do. The Marquee was supposed to not impact on us. I'm lucky if I can get into my driveway when I come home from work because someone's been dropped off or picked up in front of the Marquee. And then they look at me as if, well, what are you doing here? I should be able to just sit on your driveway. Parking's really bad. You can't get from one side of the street to the other because you've got to give way. And there's always cars out there. This development's supposed to be fine. It doesn't impact on people. It does impact on people. It impacts on everyone in that street. So maybe that should be looked at. Maybe a few more floors, maybe 4 floors would be better than 8 floors. Has that ever been taken into consideration? I know it's a high residential area, but does every space have to have a high residential unit on there? That's all I've got to say. I know it probably won't get anywhere, but...
We're obliged to look at the controls, and this is actually lower than the controls in terms of height.
It may be lower than controls, but don't you think each one should be assessed on its merit?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you.
Angelo De Martino. I assume you will be speaking on behalf of the applicant?
Yes, and Elaine.
Elaine as well?
Elaine as well, yep.
Okay, that's fine.
She was town planner on the project. We're the architects and the applicant, ADM Architects.
Can I ask you a question, just straight up?
Yep.
And it relates to shadowing.
Mm-hmm.
And I know what the controls are. And I know what the controls are on the Mar Street properties as well, so I understand the same could happen there. Yes, okay. The current property, the current building on the subject site overshadows south.
Mm-hmm.
Any building on the site is going to shadow.
That's correct.
Hypothetically, What would be the shadow cast by a four-storey building?
We've shown the shadow cast from the existing building or the existing buildings as a comparison.
Mm-hmm.
There are, so our first lot of shadow diagrams compare directly the proposed building against the existing shadow. So we modelled the, I think they're 3 to 4 storey buildings.
Mm-hmm.
They do cast a shadow onto the southern property, obviously, because our property or the proponent's property is immediately to the north of all those properties. And you will see that the shadows cast across the south are, you know, they are not as significant as the ones that we're casting, obviously, because it's a bigger building, but they are impacting on the roof and the windows and the private open space of Mr. Rossini's dwelling. I didn't interrupt you, John.
No, that's,
yeah.
I'll keep order. Carry on.
Yeah. Sorry, I don't. Yeah, that, I think I answered the question.
Yeah, I mean certainly the diagrams show that the existing structure.
We also prepared the diagrams in the Equinox, as was suggested by John to council, or requested, and
yes.
And we found that. The Equinox, because obviously we're obligated to do the shadow diagrams on the worst day of the year, and that's, you know, a given. And it was interesting to see that the Equinox diagrams, you know, they're significantly better in terms of overshadowing the roof. I don't think it's as significant an overshadow of the roof. As John's made out to be, but there are impacts, obviously, because our building is a taller building directly to the north of a single-storey dwelling. It's how do we transition, you know, at this time between having the current, you know, is it reasonable that the current property, does it get a reasonable amount of sun given the context of the zoning and the transitioning. I think I'll just Elaine. Yep.
Can I just make a couple of comments, perhaps, if I could take you through those diagrams in the winter solstice? Look, the greatest impact in the morning period, it really casts an additional shadow over the roof area, so it casts a shadow much further in the morning period. But if you have a look at 9 a.m. in the morning, the rear window of the dwelling and the northern window of the secondary dwelling, which is that smaller window at the rear, and I'd almost say all of the private open space of that existing dwelling is cast in shadow. So at 9 a.m, the impact is not, it's relatively comparable. It's probably fair to say that it really is during that midday period from 10, probably 11 and 12, where we start to see the bigger impact in the winter solstice. So we're still seeing at 10 a.m. that rear window is in shadow. We're also seeing the rear window of the main residence is still in shadow in both situations, but it's the private open space at that point that is, you know, being cast in greater shadow. Similar sort of issue at 11 a.m. At 12 a.m. Or 12 midday, it's fair to say that the rear living room window of the main residence is still in shadow in the current situation. So what we're really losing at that midday period is some sunlight on the rear open space area. Once we start to then head through from 1 o'clock, again, 1 o'clock, the rear window of the existing residence is still in shadow under the current situation, so it's really that private open space again that we're impacting. And once we then start to head into the 2 p.m. and 3 p.m. situation, they're pretty much comparable at that point in time. So I think it's fair to say through the day, the greatest additional impact that's being experienced in the winter solstice is to the more central part and perhaps the rear part of the private open space. That really, from looking at those diagrams, seems to be where the biggest impact is. And it's not an undeniable impact. We can't say it's not.
I mean, I just make a point, I guess, and it's well summarised in Council's report. The overshadowing impacts are unavoidable given the nature of the zoning, the east-west orientation of the lot, which impacts on the extent of the shadow cast. What we've done as the architects, we've actually tried to move the building as far north as possible, and as the neighbour would desire. You will notice that we're at 4.5 metres on the front setback, and the building is actually more than 50% of the width of the building, or the length of the facade that adjoins Mr. Rossini's property, is 9 metres setback all the way, even though you know as well as I do I could move the lower levels closer to the boundary. We haven't. We've kept all the building 9 metres away from the southern boundary, which is the more than the minimum setback. And then the eastern portion of the building, which is a smaller portion of the building, still about more than 7.5 metres when it can be 4.5 metres from the boundary. So in terms of trying to mitigate the impacts, we've done our best given the constraints of the site, and we've moved the building north, and we've also complied with the setback, a greater setback than the minimum in both cases. And you know, I'll just go on to say, again, given the zoning and the context of the site, it's envisaged that any future development on the adjacent site to the south would be a higher density development in the form of a residential flat building. And the council asked us to just have a look at what form that could take if, for example, that was consolidated with the site next door, which would be a minimum then of 24 metres. And we worked out that the distances between the buildings could achieve a compliant ADG separation, which I think is, you know, as important looking forward than obviously a single-storey dwelling, which in reality it is, you know...
Sorry, can I just clarify that? Yep. You're saying if the Mar Street properties that the residents we've both heard from were to amalgamate,
correct,
you could still satisfy the ADG in terms of separation.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yep. That's my point.
Any questions?
Not from me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just noticed there's these on adjacent to the stairs and adjacent to the basement ventilation risers, there's an area which looks like it's a slanted balcony, is that? Or like a non-trafficable balcony area?
What Helena, what drawing are you referring to?
It's on the, well, it's on, it starts on level three.
Level three, yep.
And then goes up through the building.
Level three, yep. That's the awning to the access below. So if you look, you're talking about on the southern side of the fire stair?
Yeah, but there's also, but it's, yeah, but it seems to be on all the levels going up through the building.
You mean the big cross? It's a ventilation.
Oh, no, no. The air outside of that, which looks like it's planted, like a balcony. Oh,
no, no, no. It's a... it's just a slab. It's like a, it's an awning. It's a concrete slab. There's no balcony out there.
What's the point of it?
I'm just looking at the south elevations. Bear with me. It's more of an architectural feature, more than anything.
So it's just an exposed slab.
Yeah, it forms... It forms a frame to the building. It's hard to explain in 2D. It's probably better if you look at it in 3D.
So it's also shown the same way adjacent. So if you look at level 3, adjacent to the balcony for unit 5, on the northern side there's a similar rectangular area.
On the northern side it forms a spandrel between the full-height glass of the entry. So where you've got the entry lobby, yep. You look out. This full-height glass, it's a small awning protecting the glass on the northern side.
So is it glass?
For when you say it's small awning, it's
concrete.
It's full width of the balcony.
Maybe I'm looking at something else. Can I just see where you're pointing?
It would be good to know. I mean, if that, are you talking about that one?
Yes.
Yeah, so on this level it's...
That's the awning to the entry below. The main
concrete slab?
Yes, but that's the main, it's the main entry.
So that's the roof
that's
over there.
On one level. Right. Then above that, That's the roof to the entry below.
Yeah. And then but this is so this is what we're talking about mainly.
That's an architectural feature that, you know, we can remove it basically.
Right.
Bulk. Yeah.
Well, and then the other question is these balconies, which there appears to be very large balconies. Mm-hmm. So I'm just wondering why these balconies need to be spaces where people could sit out and look over the property to the south. I mean, obviously this one's screened, but this one, once again, it's just off a bedroom, so I'm just not sure whether it's required. And it goes all the way up the building, yeah. Both of those.
It does.
Yeah,
but this one doesn't.
This one doesn't.
It's screened, but if we again,
this one doesn't, and this one doesn't.
Yeah.
Oh well, that one there is screened.
But they're both screened, but there's nothing that in the AGG that says screening. I mean, people screen things,
visual privacy,
but it doesn't actually deal with the separation issue.
So you're happy for them to go if need be?
The one off the bedroom two, if you like. The southeastern unit, we could look at that.
Yeah.
I would argue that the one on the northern side off the master bedroom I'd like to keep because it also forms an expression of the building. If you look at the architecture from the street, I think the 3Ds would be best, or the photo montages would be best. Let me have a look. Here. Drawing A004. You will see in the perspective.
Yeah,
A004, yeah. It's probably the best view where you can see that balcony element. The screening and the balcony articulate that side of the elevation rather than have a blank wall that just protrudes beyond the building frame. It just helps soften that elevation. I would be okay with the southern, re-looking at the southern ones, but the one on the northern side, I'd really like to think that we could keep.
But wouldn't the building be more articulated if you cut that back? And if you wanted to put some other built materials on it, you can put some materials.
Well, no, because what happens is that becomes a very, very vertical blank wall, whereas now you're actually having it slightly more horizontal with some timber. You know, articulation through there.
You can still put articulation on the wall. I mean, you can still put different materials on the wall.
You could. From an architect's perspective, I've tried to articulate that elevation. The way I've done it. So,
okay.
Yeah. What's the panel's concern with the balconies that comply with the setback on the southern side?
Not the eastern one. Neither of those two balconies comply with the setback.
They're 9 metres, southern...
No, it's not. Seven?
Southwestern ones do, but the other one...
The southwestern one's 9.7.
Yep. Yeah. That one's fine. It's the other one. It's 7.7.
Yes, whatever. And that's the one I'm happy to look at.
The other one is 4.5 with screening.
I think if I can just make a comment perhaps regarding the western one. If you look at the western units, probably their principal balcony area is slightly smaller than the eastern units, so it would be helpful if we could keep that southern balcony that has got the compliance setback, just to give that extra.
I don't think anyone's talking about the compliance setback. It's the one that doesn't comply, 7.6.
Yep, that's...
I don't like that one either. But yes, I hear what you're saying.
Okay.
Yeah, one's compliant, one's not compliant. Oh, well, and one's screened, but...
Yep.
Okay. I mean, that would comply. I mean, if we just said, OK, make that a blank wall, then that balcony actually complies because it's the one on the western side, the one we've been talking about, is more than 4.5 metres and it's only
a very short wall, but I wouldn't want to make it a blank wall. That's what I why I introduced screening, because I wanted to articulate it.
I think what people forget about the ADG and the separation is that it's not just a distance, it's an activity as well. So when you have a balcony of a certain size, you can have an activity on it. And the activity relative to the boundary and the separation is, so it's visual and oral privacy, not just visual privacy.
So massing. If, in terms of that, if we extended the blank wall along here and provided the screening on the outside face of the wall, would the panel consider that? Because I just want to keep some type of screening there, which would be only decorative then. But the wall would continue as a blank wall.
Well, then I might be asking you to change the southern wall, because that's the trigger point for the shadows. No, this wall here of bedroom one, southern wall of bedroom one, shifting it north. But I think that's the trigger point for your shadows.
Well, I don't understand. You mean in the late afternoon, in the western sun?
It comes from that corner, does it not?
Well, it comes from the edges of the building, yes. But
so if you shifted that in...
Well,
Anyway. I'm not redesigning it.
Can I just ask one last question, which is about the entry? I only just noticed it, actually. There's some sort of entry. Is that necessary, that entry sort of...
It identifies the entry from the street. It's basically an entry structure.
For the building. Is that right?
It's separate to the building. Yeah, it's separate to the building. It's like an entry gate type structure.
Yeah, it seems to impact on the streetscape.
And it's where the mailboxes go, and the street, and the building signage, and the gate.
Yeah, but it doesn't need to be so large and imposing.
I guess not.
Sorry.
Thank you, Ron.
To not ask.
You said ugly before. Dominating is a better word.
Thank you. Okay, fourth and last item, that is 13 to 15A Pass Avenue Thirroul, and I have, I don't know whether I have two or four people, but I'll call out anyway. Chris Meikle. Hey, gold star. I could have said Michael, then I'd have been in trouble, wouldn't I?
I get that most of the time. Right, I'll press on. Thanks for having us again. So, further to the last meeting, we stood and sat and discussed this in November. I'm here representing the owners of number 11 Pass Avenue, who are overseas at the moment, and also myself and my family at 9 Pass Avenue. So, without further ado, notwithstanding the previous objections made last November, it's clear the proposed twin dual occupancy development still intends to circumvent almost every planning control in the book whilst pushing the envelope on every concession. And I think we as local community, local residents, consider that none of the previous points of objection have been adequately addressed in this resubmission. So again, we've still got this medium density design on a geometrically constrained, non-compliant R2 zone block. Nothing's been done to address that. It's still, the numbers don't stack up. There isn't an adequate plan for proposed waste management. So we know that we can't access the rear lane what we're using bin trucks. Subsequently, that means 8 bins on Pass Avenue out the front, and we know that the transport of the bins across the non-compliant gradients on the block, because it's a very steep block, to access the road at Pass Avenue is not feasible or safe. There's still structures being built across easements across the frontage of the property, and we note that there is a restriction on the property next door, at number 11, that weren't allowed to extend their deck across the same easement that this property next door is now going to be crossing. Insufficient visitor parking. So we want to sort of identify, council's, lack of commitment to enforcing the illegal parking on Gumtree Lane. Now, again, all the planning proposal recognises that there's this parking space on Gumtree Lane and room to manoeuvre vehicles. It just isn't the case. There's half a dozen to a dozen vehicles parked at any one day. You can barely get any vehicle down there. This also leads to our next point around insufficient emergency vehicle access. So we had a power line down the other week. The fire engine tried to get down to fix it, couldn't get access to the lane. So what happens if someone's ill or there's a fire in one of these properties that are being built on this lane? I guess the overall suitability of Gumtree Lane is a key point as well, noting the need to upgrade it and maintain the lane. It's a significantly deteriorating council asset. I think you'll find there'll be a sort of further reports done on the actual deterioration of this lane and the danger and the public hazard it poses to local residents. Furthermore, there's the insufficient width of the lot for dual occupancy. I think this is a hot topic and covered again this evening with other development proposals. It just doesn't work. There's not enough room there. And also the visual impact on neighbours. Again, I'll let the neighbours themselves talk directly to those points, but you know, this is a big significant impact to the adjacent single-storey property. So let's be clear. I suppose the objections speak for themselves. Other than the developer, nobody wants this development. The weak self-imposed justifications of demand for higher density are not supported by any fact. It's an excuse made up by real estate agents, investors and developers to squeeze as much profit out of their investments at all costs. This proposal is not designed in any way to meet consumer demand. The market is cooling off and there is an abundance of affordable land and housing packages within the Wollongong LEP, and it's a fact that a number of local developments, including, you know, large ones providing affordable housing, including Sanctuary Ponds, the Vale and Caldwood, are struggling to make pre-sales. So we know there's plenty of space, there's plenty of property available, there's plenty of availability. Why the northern suburbs? So developments in Wollongong's release area are being purpose designed with amenity and service to meet the needs of the local community. So why add insult to poorly planned injury to a suburb that is demonstrably oversubscribed? The constraints of Thirroul and the northern suburbs are not just local resident issues, they're headline news and influencing political mandates. Not only does the overdevelopment of Thirroul have significant impact on local residents, car parks, schools, medical centres, you try and get an appointment at the local doctors in Thirroul these days, you'll be lucky to get one for a couple of weeks. Yeah, impact to traffic and the lives of residents far and wide up to suburbs like Stanmore Park and south to Winuna. It also impacts visitors who have to queue halfway up Bulleye Pass at the weekend who are trying to access Lawrence Hargrave Drive, half of whom end up taking a shortcut down Pass Avenue. So where does this all end? What happens if we all decide to subdivide our properties and then dual lock them? Where's the master plan? Where's the bigger picture? Where's the foresight? So I guess here we are again, following your previous decision to reject and defer the previous DA submission due to the high number of objections and unaddressed non-conformances of the design, including overdevelopment of the site. The revised DA submission has made little to no effort to address the concerns of the panel, non-conformances or local residents' objections, let alone the suitability of dual occupancy on what by definition, sorry, topographical definition, is a constrained site. So we can't understand really why the council has not rejected this proposal again in the first instance while we're back here. We understand that obviously your objectives are to provide, I'm going to quote, increased transparency, integrity and confidence in the development application assessment process. But we're a little bit, I guess, in the dark to what's changed and why we're here having this discussion again. And we hope that the logic and sense and the sanity will prevail again in terms of your decision. Or I guess are we just wasting our time, energy and emotion having to go for this rigmarole just to basically rubber stamp something because it's in the too hard basket for us to debate? I guess to try and conclude on a positive note, We mentioned this last time. We consider that the developer consider a subdivision with one single occupancy development on each block. This would be an amicable solution and in fitting with the street style, not put a strain on services, and I'm sure it would receive the local community support and also likely the council support. So thank you very much. Any questions? Thanks. I've got to run.
Okay, thank you. Steve Hugh. Oh, no. Ian Farrell. And Lynn Farrell, do you want to come together?
Yeah.
Grab a chair. Bring another chair up. Perfect.
Go. Yeah. Good afternoon or good evening. Thanks for having us here again. And we live at 16 Gumtree Lane, which is adjacent to this site, we've previously put submissions in, and I think Chris Michael sort of encapsulated everything that we agree with, and I've got to refer back to some of these people before us. There seems to be a common thread running through these issues that residents think there's nothing, no one's supporting them. They're not getting a fair hearing when it comes to their objections. But I've read the council officers' reports and I find it it's a bit light on. In, you know, from a lay point of view, I'd like some explanations why it is not considered now to be... The previous panel was pretty clear that they considered it an overdevelopment of the site on an unsuitable block of land or constrained block of land. And they put certain suggestions up that the applicant should look at. Well, certainly, insofar as our property is concerned, they did do a few things, taken away a skylight, which is appreciated. But I don't know if there's much else really affects to affect us. But we've still got to have a brick wall and some little windows and that sort of thing and a couple of balconies. And I think we will get a fair bit of overshadowing no matter what the diagrams are saying. They seem to vary too much from the previous one to the current one, which is saying virtually nil. You know, we're going to have much sunshine loss at all, but I think we really are, especially in the morning. And we're going to get a lot of shade in the early morning, which might necessitate light daylight coming through our bedrooms. We're on the low floor. And, you know, we get by with a lot of sunlight, you know, put the blinds up and everything in the morning and we're right. But I think it'll probably necessitate, especially maybe in winter time, that the lights will go on and all this sort of caper. But that's just that bit. But I notice that getting back to the overdevelopment issue, and I know that it's been all explained, but obviously to the satisfaction of the council officers, but it's like a closed meeting in that regard, because I don't think everyone's getting a fair view of what the reasons are why they've come across that it's, oh, yeah, it's okay now. And so far as the panel's suggestion that there be consideration given to a single-storey dwelling on each, if they're going to subdivise, if they're going to give consideration to that, it just comes up in the, what we call it, minutes or the report, a very brief report. It says that so far as, however, insofar as the recommendation about a ceiling dwelling is concerned, the applicant has opted to retain dual occupancy development. Full stop. Now, if I was a panel, I would certainly be asking, well, why not? Is there a reason? Or is it just your... That's your reasoning. Let's get this thing out of the way. And I agree with what Chris says. It seems to be getting in the too hard basket. It's blocking up the proceedings. So let's give it the... Let's make concessions. And this is another thing, another thread that's come up. There seems to be the perception that there is concessions. They're probably excessive concessions given to applicants by council. And the consideration of residents not fully taken into account. I think one of your members there, Mr. Hubbard, made a comment earlier in the proceedings regarding the regard had to residents' concerns. So, you know, I can't argue that, okay, the council made their decisions that they accept every advice that's been given them by their council officers, and they've looked at whatever else has been put up by the applicant, so I can't really argue on the grounds of being an expert, and I don't profess to be one. So I do take up the issue about, I know it's said that each matter is considered on its merit according to the council report. It won't be a precedent set if this approval goes ahead. Insofar as a previous recent decision made in Thurule, it's the panel, and it made certain determination, and it said in the last one, in the circumstances of this of the case and with submissions received, approval of the development would set an undesirable precedent which would not be in the public interest. Now, they're saying it could set an undesirable precedent. And yet we're told, no, there's no such thing as precedence. Everything's on its merits. So where do we stand there? We stand in the rock and hard place, eh? Or maybe it's just left hand doesn't know what right hand's doing. And the other thing is, Chris made the point, I'll be very quick, about the garbage. I've mentioned it before. We've got a lane that's apparently within the limits of slope. There is no garbage truck service there because council said they can't fit garbo trucks down there. Well, that's becoming widespread now with these very narrow streets we're building developments. But they can get a small garbo down there. I've approached them on that before. They said no. But for us to get our land, I've got to cart them up the hill, right? I've got this slope. Now, okay, I think I'm reasonably fit, but I think that sometimes the load gets pretty bloody heavy, and I hook it up to the car because lucky got a tow bar there. What if the people got no tow bar on a car and they're a bit elderly or whatever, haven't got the strength? What are they going to do? What the hell are they going to do? Pay someone to take it up for them? And up the top of the pass there, we're going to have four garbo bins from the two units every Thursday. We've got ours, that's another two, that's six. There's two on the corner, that's eight. There's another one on the corner, that's ten. That's at least 10 bins there. Now, what's happening now, because some people in the pass, Bullock Pass Road, they can't get across the street. It's very difficult to get out there. You live on the southern side of the road. You want to get your car out to go in the morning, so they ask up the neighbours, can we park in the street all day? Pass Avenue, very close to the proximity where they say, oh, you got plenty of room to put your bins. Come and have a look on them. Come and have a look on garbage day. Come and try and get the bin up the hill when there's cars coming now, the other way.
Now, Len, he's taking your time.
Oh, sorry. Anyhow, that's all I got to say. Otherwise, Merry Christmas.
Okay, that's good.
I suppose that we're here to say that we believe that the block is unsuitable for dual occupancy at the front. We live next door to the development that is proposed. So what I particularly want to talk about was the number four amenity impact. And I'll just read what it actually said from the developers. It said number 16, which is us, currently enjoys views from their living room window and first floor balcony. Right. The proposal is considered to have been designed to reasonably retain these views as discussed in 2.4. The proposal hasn't reasonably been designed to retain these views. And they're talking about currently enjoys views from the living room window, which is absolutely wrong. I don't think they've even looked at our plans. We do have a large living room window, which we get our light and our sunlight from. But next to that, we have it's open plan, and we're facing the building. We have three large long windows, which we get light and views from. That's the kitchen. And then further along at the entrance foyer, which was all on one wall, we have another three long windows, which is when you come in the front door. So this is all along the wall. It's facing the development. Because the roof is going to slant upwards towards the lane, our living room window, which is the one where we've got all our light, is going to be blocked up to eye level, is what they're saying on the plan. So our window is here, so we will look like that. Now, these other three windows that are parallel to it or alongside it, as the roof goes up, we will lose completely from all the windows running down the eastern side of our. So, in reality, we're blocked in. Downstairs, we have a large bedroom window that faces the development. That will be blocked in also. We have a courtyard, which is where we get all the nice sun and privacy. That will also have this development across it. So, in actual fact, if we're talking about light and, you know, kind of views and peacefulness and tranquility and mental health with the people that are living in certain places, this is, to us, a complete abomination. And what I take exception with is that, as far as I can see, the developers didn't even look at our plans. To say we had one living room window that was going to be impacted, our whole house there is going to be impacted. And that's it.
Can I just ask a question? Gentleman who's had to leave,
Chris,
suggested a standard subdivision, house at the back, house at the front. Do you accept that as a principle?
Yeah. Well,
because
you could expect that to happen.
Because a house would be either the same size or potentially bigger than what's currently proposed. I just want you to be aware of the fact that I'm looking at these plans and they are probably a story's worth, roughly, lower than the height limit. And if the mere fact that this might be a two dwellings within this structure, but the structure would be in the same spot and higher. So sometimes you've got to be careful what you wish for, because potentially, and I'm just highlighting that 9 metres is permissible there.
In both
properties, both lots are lower by roughly a story than the controls allow.
I suppose
that's at the end of it.
Both of them, both goes buildings. But I mean, look, I can show you very full story, lower than I want you to be aware that we're absolutely listening to what you're saying, and obviously this panel, and I'm the only common person to that panel, had concerns with the density of the development where it was. But in terms of your specific issue, which is views and sunlight, in another scenario, it's quite likely to be worse and fully comply with the controls. Because I've heard a lot of issues about complying with the numbers and the controls, and pretty much this now complies. There's a minor little non-compliance here, and yes, it's narrower, closer to Gumtree, but the panel asked them to do that.
Yeah, but
so we can't have our cake and eat it. So I just need you to be aware of that, that the scenario, the controls anticipate effectively a three level, because 9 metres gives you three levels flat roof, pretty much where your house is, at the back.
Well, let's go into overdevelopment then.
No. Well, I don't want you to wish for something that may not actually give you what you think. Yeah, that's all. Because, as I've said to the gentleman earlier, this panel is obliged to consider the controls. Now, there are two levels of controls. There's statutory controls, and the height is one of them. That's a more powerful control. Then there's the other set of controls, which are guidelines. And most of the controls, all of the controls that you would say they don't comply with, they're the guidelines, and they're only marginally not complying with the number. And they're guidelines to achieve an outcome. So we have to be very mindful of that. There's many ways to skin a development cat, particularly in relation to the development control plan controls. They're not cast in stone statutory controls. Those are in the LEP, and I know this is getting technical, and this is the stuff that we know and you don't know, but I don't want you to go away. I don't want you to go away and think that this panel or the council dismisses what you might think are controls. I just want you to clarify that there are really big, powerful, scary controls. And Mr. Montgomery raised an issue with an earlier matter about, well, you're asking us to vary that control, and that was a big, powerful control that has a lot of weight to give it. Then there's controls that are more guidelines to achieve an outcome, because we don't live on square blocks, we don't live on a flat earth, and controls don't always work equally on every block, so we have to be very mindful.
It doesn't give that interpretation to the layman, does it, really?
Doesn't help, no. And just think how big those books would be if we had to explain it.
No.
But I just wanted to explain that.
Oh, yes, they're very good. We appreciate that very much.
But we still
would
like the panel
to
again go back to what we were saying in the beginning about the overdevelopment of the area. It does not fit in with the community feel of where it is. You've been out to see the block, haven't you?
Twice.
And of course there's another development down the lane. And I haven't been able to find any details of that the council.
Don't know about that.
No, but that's going to just, like Chris said, it would be nice if everyone subdivided. Well, there is another potential block also down there that will be subdivided. And so if you get a mass, you're going to have a wall-to-wall. It's going to be a Gumtree Boulevard.
Yeah. I've gone off book here and tried to do a bit of explanation, but
We'll leave it alone now.
Just by way of explanation and observation, because although I haven't met you before, I sit on a lot of panels and we deal with a lot of applications into the rural and the northern suburbs.
Yeah.
And at the moment, what we're seeing, well, with this development, we're seeing a development that essentially complies with the development controls which the council's put in place.
Mm-hmm.
But on my observation, what I'm seeing is there's a bit of a disconnect between community expectations and the development controls that currently exist.
Yep.
And as a panel, we can't change those controls. We can only consider applications under those controls, but there's a much bigger picture issue, I guess, in terms of whether or not in the future the council is going to think about changing the zonings because of that, and I'll call it a disconnect because I think it is, between community expectations, not just neighbours, but the community as a whole has an expectation for what the rules going to look like, and the actual legal controls that are in place. So I understand exactly what you're saying, and we I guess we can empathise with you to an extent, but by the same token, that's a bigger issue that we can't control dealing with.
I would urge you, and this is what the community doesn't do, right, understandably, I would urge you to be involved. When council does decide to change its controls, and you get something in the letterbox about talking about the changing controls, that's when you really need to engage with council, because that's when you can deal with these issues. On a site-by-site basis, the controls are already in place. There are things, that we can do, but I would urge you, when that happens, and all councils at this moment in time are in the process of changing their controls. So I would urge you to get yourself involved and the community to get involved in those sorts of things. And I'm sure Mr. Knowles will get himself involved.
So when you see an ad in the paper that says something about changing controls or LEP or something that you don't quite understand...
Too late for us.
No, that's when you get involved.
Ring one of you guys to explain.
That's when you...
Make it your business to
have
it explained.
I still have to say we've got a lovely house that we are now going to have the doors in front of us.
So. No, well, it's going to have something to happen there.
Anyway, thank you for that. So I now have Mr. Hughes, and if you've... You've addressed all the issues you wanted to address. Sorry, Mr. Hughes.
Thanks very much.
That's all right. I think it's Mr. Hughes. Yes, Steve Hughes. Yes.
Kate Lynch, also from DML.
The floor is yours.
Thank you. I might deal with the specific comments first. Mr. Meikle raised a number of issues, some of which you will be aware that were factually incorrect in terms of seeking to circumvent every rule in the book, etc. So I'm assuming so I'm not going to go with those sort of... more general issues. He raised an issue regarding the easement, putting a structure across an easement. There is actually no easement in place at the moment, and that easement will be created at council's request. And obviously the structure is a driveway to get access to the block, which is not an unreasonable request. He talked about emergency vehicle access. Well, I would suggest that the emergency vehicle The emergency services are fully appraised of the local situation, and the situation for this particular block is no different to any of the other block in the area. I think that is... Sorry, there's one final comment. He said nobody wants the development. Well, that's an interesting notion, because the fact is that this development has been proposed to address a very specific need within the community, and the notion of what a community actually is needs to be considered. The fact is that there's a shortfall of smaller, more compact dwellings in the northern suburbs. The idea of aging in place is significant and makes a massive difference to the community at large because of the various implications in terms of people being able to stay as part of that community. Like it or not, this kind of development directly addresses that because it provides people opportunities to stay within their local community for longer than they would otherwise be able to do. Mr. Meikle said there was no facts around this. Well, the Australian Bureau of Statistics clearly demonstrates that if you have a look at the provision of smaller dwellings in the northern suburbs, there's a shortfall. The neighbours, I think, was it Mr. and Mrs. Falconer or Falcon? Farrell, pardon me, Farrell. The issue of the consideration that we've given to your dwelling, I would suggest that it's been significant and considerable in that the proposed development is sensitively located such that as a result of the panel's comments last time, the house has actually moved, the proposed Duloc has been moved back 1.5 metres. So their views have been improved from a side window, I should say. The house is actually orientated to the north, but it's from a side window. And we've removed the clerestory, so that is a significant improvement and that you will have those views retained. The windows, the linear or the vertical windows that you mentioned, as far as I understand from the plans, that facade is about 6 or 7 metres from the side boundary. So it's relatively enclosed there at the moment. So I'm not sure there will actually be a significant impact as a result of undertaking the development as we have proposed. In terms of your comment as to why we've opted to go for the dual occupancy, well, that comes down to the fact that we're able to provide a development that essentially complies. It's a compliant development. There are two minor variations. One is the setback which to Gumtree Lane, which has been designed to benefit you, that we've actually gone for that variation so that we can pull the building out, which benefits you. The other one's to do with landscaping, although it's actually a technicality. The total amount of landscaping that we've provided for the front lot is 166 square metres, whereas actually we're required to provide 114. However, to put 50% of the proposed landscaping behind the building line, we have to provide 84, or actually just under that at 83, I think it is. However, if we provided the minimum, we would fully comply. So that bears consideration as well. Regarding the garbage, we have been through lengthy discussions regarding the bin collection. I think it's been accepted that what we have now proposed, which is to do exactly the same as yourself, is to have collection from Pass Avenue. What I would say is the bins will be smaller because these are small dwellings, therefore less people are going to live there. So the actual action of having to trundle them up the driveway will not be significant. Furthermore, Remondis have also indicated that they are now looking at smaller vehicles, and so as I understand from Ramondas, and also in informal discussions with council, that this will be changing. Looking at the proposal in a little bit more detail in terms of how the planning panel commented previously, I'd just like to address how we've approached the proposal. So, as I just mentioned, we have reconsidered the proposal in light of the panel's comments, and the offer, if you like, was made there that we should reconsider and decide which option we went for. We've opted to progress a dual occupancy on site because essentially it complies with FSR, it complies with height, it complies with site coverage, it complies with landscape, and it complies with site width. Looking at the detail request from the panel, which was to move buildings B1 and B2 or a single dwelling development, we've opted to retain the dual occupancy further to the south. We've opted to move buildings B1 and B2 further south and reduce the size to 125 square metres each. This results in increased separation from the units fronting Pass Avenue. The units now only require one parking spot. Although we've provided an additional visitor space, we'll actually improve the parking situation on Gumtree, so there'll be a net improvement. The prevailing street character has garages fronting directly onto or close to the lane. The DCP states that council will consider a variation where prevailing street character has a reduced frontage for carports. I think we are way in excess of the prevailing street character. The next item, B, on the panel's list was reduce the size of B1 and B2 so that only one car parking space is required, which could ideally be located in a carport to allow visibility. We've again adopted that direct request. A carport is proposed, as I said, with a second visitor space each. This has facilitated additional landscaping to Gumtree Lane, which will result in a net improvement to the environmental quality of Gumtree Lane. A slatted screen is proposed for the side of the garage, which will further improve the possibility for visibility through and visual legibility. Item C, move the buildings A1 and A2 forward to the street and either relocate the parking north of the culvert or relocate the culvert. In discussion with council, it was deemed that this was not possible or practical, and they resisted, the engineering section resisted this option due to basic engineering requirements. The proposed setback is consistent with adjoining dwellings and minimises impact on the streetscape, and it allows for deep soil planting a width of 12 metres deep. Now, what this does do is allow the facility to have significant landscaping to the frontage, which is considerate of the general streetscape of Pass Avenue. Item D was increase the landscape area behind the building to a minimum of 50%. Well, I've just mentioned some headline figures there. We can dig into that if necessary, but if you wish to explore that further, I'm happy to field questions on it. In addition to the specific recommendations of the panel, the following amendments to the design have been made. The two-lot subdivision boundary has been relocated south so as to provide more landscape area to the rear of buildings A1 and A2. That has then offered the opportunity to provide a rear access door to the yards and relocated drying lines, which has improved the design. Solar access has been improved as a result. The shadow diagrams demonstrate the overshadowing of the north-facing yards of B1 and B2 has been reduced considerably, although they did previously comply. They're now very good. There's now minimal overshadowing to any of the yards of B1 and B2, units B1 and B2. The shared driveway has been removed, and additional driveway crossover has been located to access unit A2. Unit A1 will utilise the existing driveway crossover. This change has been made so to provide the buildings the capability of up to 3 visitor cars parked off the street. So I guess that addresses Mr. Meikle's concern regarding parking, that there is, in the event of a number of guests arriving, there is opportunity for considerable parking on the block. this ability to park six additional cars off street is a superior outcome. The clerestory skylight to the building B1 and B2 has been removed and replaced with a surface-mounted solar tube skylight, as this was a concern for the neighbours. Building B1 and B2 now have street-facing front door, which enhances passive surveillance. They also give superior street address and facilitate additional landscaping to the Gumtree Lane frontage. The revised design has reduced the requirement for extensive retaining walls on the boundary, which will have a positive impact on existing conditions for both adjoining neighbours. Finally, the scheme proposes a Torrens subdivision, which is consistent with Council's LEP and numerous dual occupancy approvals throughout the council area. I think that'll do it.
Anyone have any questions?
Just a question on the flooding. It could be the sky flooding. It's just, is it a contrast in colour for the walls?
Is that a general or specific to a particular?
No, just a general, because it's not actually marked. It's not very clearly detailed.
Do you want to know what the is it sky? Yeah, it is sky. Yep. One's horizontal, the front lot's got it horizontal.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. We will now adjourn the meeting at 7:10. Not adjourn the meeting, close the meeting. I apologise. I'm not adjourning anything, it's closed.